Bitcoin made you a libertarian. What?
No. Introduce me to libertarianism. Running a business made me libertarian. We've made it too hard. We've destroyed ambition and entrepreneurship in this country, and it's not good. You get punished. It's like death by a thousand cuts. In every direction, people are just ripping you off, scamming you. That makes me sad. These are 30 grand people who are taking the 90 grand job because nobody else wants it. 8 in 10 teachers would vote for Labour or Green. That's terrifying. And we have brilliant people in this country. They don't go anywhere near politics. Why would they? They have their lives exposed, constant pressure, might get murdered, and there's no financial reward. And so we are attracting idiots. Meet King Charles, Buckingham Palace, go explain Bitcoin to him.
So Pete McCormack, 4 years from now, Prime Minister, could you be the leader Britain needs?
All views expressed by the host or guests are solely their own opinions. Nothing stated in this podcast should be considered a specific endorsement to make any particular investment or follow any specific strategy.
Welcome back to Own Bitcoin, Pete. I'm excited to talk to you about Bitcoin, everything you've built, and what's next. Part one was just the beginning, so here we are, part two. So next up, Pete the Builder. What's one business idea you tried that crashed and burned?
I set up a website, how long ago, 15, 16 years ago, called Banter, which was a social media website for people who liked football. And so when a game was on, you could sit there with your phone and say there was a sending off. You could vote whether you thought it was a sending off or not. You could rate the players afterwards and you can interact with other fans during the game. It was a great idea.
Maybe too early?
Too early and over-engineered. Okay. We built too many features into it. It was complicated to follow and it should have been really just a very simple concept.
Yeah.
And people liked it, but ultimately it failed because it didn't solve a problem. It just created an addition to entertainment. But actually, if I'd have done it again, I know the problems we could have solved.
Bet for safe bet or wild bet?
It's a wild bet because Bedford's problems are downstream from government. And so a bet on Bedford is a bet really on the government itself. And I tried to fix things locally and I just came up against obstacles because of central government and a financial and political system that works against people. And so I'm pulling back a little bit on Bedford to focus on the country, because to fix Bedford, you have to fix the country. You fix the country, fix the world.
What taught you more about business, Bitcoin or Bedford?
Bedford?
Why?
Because the way you learn about business is doing it. Like you can't learn about business going to university or reading a book. The way you learn about business is you just start one. Bitcoin taught me about people and systems and incentives. Like business itself, the best, just Bedford, because this is where I created businesses. But the way you learn about business is just creating one.
Yeah. And then is when you become a libertarian.
Like if somebody was going to university and they were going to get 60 grand of debt to learn about business, I'd be like, you're mad. You can, for hundreds of pounds, set up a business. You can spend 60 grand setting up business after business after business, and you will be way more educated on business spending 60 grand on yourself trying to create businesses than you will be on going to a university and learning about business.
What's been the most rewarding part of running your football club?
Winning leagues. Just winning. Trying to do something for the community and seeing the impact it has on kids. So locally, we've been able to support youth teams and give them kits and supplies. Ultimately, the reason to have a football team is to create something for young people, not to create a team for adults to play in. You create the team for adults to play in to create the identity and the structure and the revenue stream. So ultimately, you can build something where kids can go and play football.
How many people do you have on your payroll across all your businesses?
I don't know, not many, 25.
And how do you think your staff and your football players will describe your leadership style?
chaotic, determined.
Chaotic and determined. How come?
Well, so, I mean, I bought a football club that had 40 fans, plays in a field, and said we're going to get in the Premier League. So, certainly determined and ambitious and fearless, but also cavalier and a bit punk rock, maybe, because I just don't care about the unwritten societal rules about how you're meant to do things. We're a football club with a skull as a logo, and you look at all our graphics, I don't look at any other football club, and when our team comes out, we play Rage Against the Machine, who they're kind of socialist now, but and we score goals, we play Deftones and Pantera. We just there's a famous advertising slogan that says, when the world zigs, zag, and I think that's how I run my businesses. I try and do them with a zag.
Why tip code? Explain.
Well, because I was traveling around the world going to conferences, and I was like, this is bollocks. Why don't I just put one on here and make everyone come to Bedford and actually see a Bitcoin project? But it's a bit like doing one in El Zonte. Go to where the Bitcoin projects are. So that's why, really. Yeah, no other reason.
So you run a football club, a podcast, a bar, a coffee shop, a conference, and a fund.
Yes.
Have I missed anything?
That's the main things.
What makes them Bitcoin companies?
They're run by a Bitcoiner, they accept Bitcoin, and they hodl Bitcoin.
What next?
Less.
Less.
Yeah, less. Just slow down. I get tired now. Try and scale education about this broken financial and political system through content. And help other people spot what's happening and give them the exits, which I'm evolving on. I used to think the exit was better politics. That might not be solvable. The financial machine might be too big and too strong now to defeat it. So exit comes in different ways. It comes from exiting actually from the system, which is Bitcoin financially. You know, perhaps going to live somewhere remote and raising chickens and growing vegetables and just choosing not to play the game. Because often, you know, what's that old saying? The way to win is just not to play. I'm starting to feel like the way to win is not to play. And so can I position the content in a way that people recognize it, it's useful, and they can benefit from it?
Tell us a bit about the fund. Who or what are you backing?
Just local people. Look, life is financially very challenging for the majority of people these days. And consequence of that is kids with ambition can't do or achieve things they want to do because their parents cannot afford the cost. So you could be a badminton player, a dancer, you could be a motor racing driver, you could be anything, and you cannot achieve your maximum potential because you can't afford it. And so the goal was just to have some money to give away. And we haven't had a lot, like 75 grand. And I think it's maybe like 80, 90 because of the Bitcoin now. And we've distributed over half it, I think about £50,000. And it's just because of that, some kids have been able to go and do things that they can't afford to do. I wish I had millions to distribute because the list is endless. For every one I accept, there's 10 I have to not accept. And each time it breaks my heart, there's a kid there who has a talent, who wants to do something, and perhaps they might not get to do it because their parents can't afford it. And look, there are multiple reasons they can't afford it, but right now, many can't afford it because we are extracting our money up to the wealthiest who lead it the least. Yeah, every rich person who benefits from extraction is taking away from a youngster somewhere who has an ambition who can't do it because his parents can't afford it because the system is so crippled that it extracts more and more and expects you to accept less and less.
What are the incentives to build businesses like Real Coffee or the Peter McCormick Show in England?
In England. I think there's less incentives. I mean, I wrote a tweet the other day saying I cannot be bothered to start businesses anymore. I was going to open a pizza restaurant. The capex for that was nearly 400,000. Then there's cash flow, signing a 10-year lease, doing this in a tough economic environment. I mean, all of that is, it's just challenging. It's much easier just to put your money in the markets and watch it grow. And I think there's less incentives. And I think that's why people are exiting and leaving the country or retiring early or just can't be bothered. We've made it too hard. We've destroyed ambition and entrepreneurship in this country, and it's not good.
How exactly does the system get in the way?
It's those three levers of power, which is money creation, civil liberties, and the regulatory environment. And so if you're creating a business and they are extracting money through money creation, they are driving inflation. And so if you run a local shop, you have less purchasing power from the customer base to come and buy from you, yet your costs are going up, your direct costs of the products you buy, but then your costs of running your business, from minimum wage to HR costs to accounting costs, your taxes are going up, and the regulatory environment puts all these pressures onto small businesses that don't exist. Like if you're Starbucks, you get to buy your product cheaper because you buy it at scale, and you get to scale the regulatory environment, HR, accounting, and you get to play financial games with the money. If you're a one-person coffee shop, you have so much administrational pressure from HR to accounting, and it's just very hard to make money now. Very, very hard. And that's why society is just one of the many signals that society is collapsing. We're destroying the middle class. In every direction, people are just ripping you off, scamming you. Over the last year, there's been so many just little things that have just taken a little, like, it's like a death by a thousand cuts. Little things from a guy walking onto our front driveway, breaking into my son's car and stealing my sunglasses and his wallet, to someone hitting my car in a car park with theirs and driving off and not leaving a note, which costs £800 to fix, to in my coffee shop. People are just stealing the cutlery because it's nice. They just think, I'm just going to take that. I like that spoon. It's nice. I'm taking it. But it's theft. But it's then you go into the employment law at the moment in this country. I mean, you only get rid of somebody if you have a company, you only tend to get rid of them for two reasons, generally. Mm. In my experience, it's because they're rubbish at their job or you can't afford them. Well, if you can't afford them, you should be able to get rid of them because you want to be able to have a profitable business. And if they're rubbish at their job, you should be able to say, look, I'm getting rid of you because you're rubbish. Structurally, to get rid of somebody because of the employment laws in this country is a nightmare. You have to go through a delicate set of steps. If you do not get right, they take you to an employment tribunal and they can extort money from you, even though they're in the wrong. And this is the problem with the surface area of the state. When the surface area of the state is so big and they try and regulate everything, usually it enables the grifters and the scammers and it punishes the honest people. Mm. It's everywhere at the moment. And that's just another one of the reasons I cannot be bothered to start a business, because you get punished all the time for being the risk taker. And if you do generate a profit, the government takes it all anyway. So it's just like, what's the point? I mean, it goes back to defending life, liberty, and property.
Yeah. What changes did you actually want to make when you considered running for mayor of Bedford?
I just wanted to run the council like a business, how a businessman would. So cut waste, ensure the money that they do have goes into the right places. I wanted to reduce tax, which has never happened. I wanted to prove you could reduce tax. I just bring in as many libertarian principles as I could, but it can't be done. I've looked at the job. I've looked at the council. I've looked at the debt. I've looked at their commitments. The problem is there is so much regulation. So much of it is handed down from central government of all the things you have to do. You can't run these councils anymore. They basically are there to shoulder the things that government promises to win power, and then they they pass down the responsibility of delivering that to the local council without the resources to do it. So it's a fool's errand. I'm just not going to do it.
What's a small local policy you've pushed harder than anyone ever has?
I've not really been pushing policies, but safety. But honestly, half the town hates me for that.
How come?
Oh, why is a rich local guy employing goons to put on the high street? What are they regulated by? Who are they accountable to? Blah, blah, blah. It's just you're running into the political machine. Mm-hmm. Again, life, liberty, defense of property would allow somebody to privately put security in place. There's no law that's been broken. Mm. But we're so conditioned to wanting the state to produce everything that if somebody does it within the private sector, there are certain people who think that shouldn't be done, even though it's private. They just don't want it. They want it regulated, controlled by the state. And it just becomes political, like everything now is political. So
this episode is brought to you by Bitbox, the Bitcoin hardware wallet that guards your sovereignty. The Bitcoin-only Bitbox 02 Nova is Swiss-built, intuitive, fully open source, comes with a micro SD card, and is protected by a secure element. So keep your Bitcoin on your Bitbox, offline and safe where it belongs. Go to bitbox.swiss and use code ALLINBITCOIN for 5% off or check the show notes. So you pulled out of running for Bedford Mayor.
Well, I didn't even run for mayor.
Yeah. Because in your words, the budget was a joke and you can't do more from outside the system. Can you explain how?
Again, it goes back to that point of creating the content that allows people to understand that the mechanics are wrong. The mechanics of the state need fixing before any of this can be fixed. And so I think I can be more effective by creating the content and the pressure on the state to do these things. I will fail. Like I say, I think the machine's too big now. Like, what can a guy with a coffee shop in Bedford really do? I can't do much, but I think at the same time, if I have a choice of being outside of the system and throwing hand grenades in and creating pressure, that's going to be more effective than it being in the system and just stuck, just with sludge each way stopping me.
Do you think you understand power better now or you trust it less?
Both. I mean, I understand power, mm-hmm. although I think I'll understand a bit more. I want to read Machiavelli's The Prince, which I downloaded. and I certainly don't trust power at all.
Bitcoin made you a libertarian. What?
No. Introduce me to libertarianism. Running a business made me a libertarian.
What do you see in Austrian economics?
Understands people and incentives. That's it. It's the study of people and incentives, whereas Keynesian is like rationalizing government monetary expansion.
What do you think is the biggest threat to freedom today?
Government.
Who's your political hero and why?
I don't think I have a political hero because I don't know historically enough or people before my time. There's a guy I've been researching recently who was one of the Roman emperors. He was a farmer. I forget his name, Canisius or somebody. Somebody will correct me in the comments. Anyway, he came in, did the job, left. And I read a thing from Millet this morning where he said once he's done his job, he doesn't want to be a politician. Once he served his second term, he'll go back to his ranch and he'll become a professor and teach. I think anybody who understands what the limits of power are, they go and do their job and leave, then that would be somebody who would be a political hero. But I don't have any political heroes. I have people I have admired for certain things. I admired certain things about what Thatcher did. Mm-hmm. During the 70s, inflation here was crazy. And she got that under control. She made the UK respected on the international stage. But there hasn't been a politician since who I've would ever put remotely near a hero block.
What do you think the British people actually expect from their government?
Huh. Oh, what do they expect? I mean, I think we all expect the government to make our lives better. Mm-hmm. What else? What is the role of the government? It is to enable you to pursue happiness.
What's the biggest crime ever committed by the British government?
You know, you've asked that deliberately. Inflation. But the Tony Blair government started a war in Iraq, or were part of a coalition of willing for a war in Iraq that nobody in this country wanted, that politicians quit over, that a million people protested against, and it destabilized the region. It's a horrific crime. Tony Blair himself should be tried for war crimes. He should be in The Hague. We posture against other political leaders in other parts of the world as evil and villainous. This guy is a terrible human being. And that is a crime, because it made this country complicit in something which should never have happened. But inflation is the biggest crime.
Why do you think freedom of speech is being taken away?
Because it harms what government wants to do. They don't want a free society of free people who think freely and speak freely, because it's a risk to what they want to do. Like, words don't harm. Like, I'm not an absolutist. I think if I tell somebody to go and kill somebody and they do directly, or I dox somebody, that there should be penalties for that. But at the same time, we all have agency. Words are just words. We teach this as kids. We say sticks and stones will break our bones, but names will never hurt us. Here we have a government that wants to restrict the things we say. They don't want free people who think freely. He sounds so conspiratorial. When you hear this, you're like, oh, that guy sounds like a conspiracy theorist. But no, it's just our speech, our freedom, our ability to think and speak freely harms him. I've ratioed the Prime Minister on Twitter 3 times in the last 2 weeks, because the bloke is a moron. He wants to ban Twitter, and it's not about bikini shots. We can all agree that kids shouldn't be undressed on Twitter. That's not a good thing. He doesn't want that. He doesn't want Twitter because everybody, there's like a spoken revolution against this government on Twitter. He, in his stupidity, thinks he can ban that and stop that. But all he will do is poke the bear harder and unleash another fire under him.
Why aren't more people fighting for their rights as they are taken away from them?
Because I don't think people truly understand how dangerous and evil the state can be. And they are lost thinking we can vote our way out of this. This next politician will fix this. Well, actually, yeah, you know, these mean words, maybe we should stop that because the government tells me so. I just think when you revolt, you're revolting against two classes of people. You're revolting against the political elite, and you're revolting against the people who do their bidding, who are often voters. And I think some people just do not understand the consequences of bad government.
What don't they get about government and economy?
Well, I don't think they understand is that when they allow a government or do their bidding for infringements on rights, at some point someone's going to come after their rights too in a way they don't like. And it's such an easy, obvious thing to spot once you can see it all with clarity. But I just think some people just are unable to make that mental leap because, like I did once, they believe government is necessary and does want to do good. In terms of economics, I just don't think people understand that freedom comes from the defense of property. And ultimately, a state that redistributes eventually runs out of money to redistribute. And it's a very hard thing because it's like when you talk about taking away welfare, it feels so, I don't know, unfair. You want to take money away from poor people? No, I just don't want to enable a state which weaponizes these things against the population. I mean, we are, look how advanced technically we are. Look how advanced our economies are. And look how many people are living in poverty. The money exists. It's because it's extracted away to the rich people that we have these problems of poverty. If there was zero tax, we would have better distribution to those who need it more.
When and why do you think the UK stopped celebrating success and successful people?
It might be something that has always been in our DNA, that tall poppy syndrome. I don't know. Maybe some people are just finding life hard when they see someone with success. It attacks their own ego. I also think we have an education system designed to support the state, and socialist ideas are more, you know, with socialism comes with creating a boogeyman, which is the millionaires and the billionaires. They're not the boogeyman. The boogeyman's the government, but they want you to look over there. So maybe I think the demonizing of success comes from the more socialist aspects of our government and electorate.
In a photo, we always look at ourselves first. We are the center of our own movie. When you look at England, what do you see first? What's the center of that movie?
Right now?
Yeah.
That's a very hard question to answer, how to frame that. I think it's a tragedy. I think what's happening to our country is a tragedy. It's a self-inflicted suicide, all downstream from an inept, immoral, spineless political class that put votes and power ahead of what is clearly required in our country. And so we're a tragedy. This is a country that is committing suicide. And I think it's a country that's depressed, that's humiliating itself on the public stage and driving away the best people. And I'm terrified for the future of this country. I'm terrified. And I don't see if it's a movie, I at the moment do not see a happy ending. It's a movie I want to turn off.
Let me show you a clip from my recent conversation with Jeff Booth.
Okay.
I try not to talk about people. I try to talk about systems. Who would you expect to be leading on top of a system based on theft? Wouldn't you expect the people who were best at it to be leading? And that would include many, many people, whether they know it or not, inside our institutions of today. The institutions of today are not protecting you. They're controlling you. The problems can't be solved from within their system, and no matter who it is. So I would rather not talk about the people perpetuating that system, because it's just, if you changed a person, it would make no change.
That's basically what we've spoken about in this interview.
Can the right prime minister fix Britain from inside the system?
Yeah, so I'm contradicting Jeff's point here. Only if their mandate is to fix the system, which is to restore government to what Bastiat said it should do, which is defend life, liberty, and property and nothing else. And that's the only way. And that means they have to campaign on that mandate, win that mandate. The challenge in this country is that we do not have a codified constitution. And so can you bind future governments to that? I mean, they tried it in the US. They had many a battle, the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists, over the power of the state and what the federal government would do. And the Federalists won, but the Anti-Federalists have been proven right. I mean, I think I am a constitutionalist. I believe we need a hard, firm constitution and a Bill of Rights, which defends the rights of the people and prevents us from having government which can redistribute. And so, look, I agree with Jeff, but my caveat is having a government that campaigns on one issue and one issue only, and has a mandate to do it and does it.
Next clip. In 2021, El Salvador made Bitcoin legal tender. In your view, what was the impact both in El Salvador and globally?
I think it was such a bold move to do that. I was there shortly thereafter, that move, and I had a big presentation there. People were flying in from all over the world. And the day before I went were all the murders. And we still went, but it was crazy. And I think what happened there behind the scenes, the control structure didn't know that Bukele was going to make Bitcoin legal tender. And that shocked the control structure. And then the behind the scenes, he wanted to create a false flag to be able to hurt his credibility as president. And then he instead locked everyone else up.
You've interviewed President Bukele. Have you ever asked yourself who and how could someone actually turn Britain around?
Yes, I've asked whether I could do it.
Yes.
Can I be that guy? I think about it a lot, but I think about it as how can I'm not the only person thinking that what I believe needs to be done needs to be done, what Jeff would say would need to be done, but very few do. How could I, as the coffee shop owner in Bedford with the podcast who talks about Bitcoin, how could I be the guy who becomes prime minister and makes this change? But I am close to some of the levers of power, previous prime ministers, leaders of parties. I've got to know some of them, but I've told them my feelings on this, and nobody shares them within the political elite, that we need a complete re-engineering of the role of the state, an undoing of the vast majority of the statutes that have been created to eradicate the welfare state, that the government doesn't act as a department of redistribution, that its stated goals and mandate are limited. And I don't know if I can sell this to enough people, because I think it requires a lot of knowledge and understanding. And I'm not willing to be a dictator who does this. There is nobody within the political class at the moment that I believe has a plan that can do this. That makes me sad.
Last clip.
Today, and because of my book and because of other things, many PhD economists come to me and say, did my entire schooling on this perception of you knew what money was and it was credit. And then the whole system had to be built on this, but nobody ever went deeper. And so I don't know why. I think it just comes down to people who don't ask a very simple question because they think somebody else knows it. The economy could be understood by a five-year-old.
Yeah,
it doesn't take a mathematician, doesn't take anything else. It's the sum total of our trade, and prices fall because we compete with each other to provide more value. That's what this economy should look like. It doesn't look anything like that, which is why the entire construct of economists and teachers and everything else to teach you that you shouldn't ask about what's a very simple concept.
It's too complicated.
It's too complicated for your mind to understand. We'll tell you what it looks like.
Do you think the British government know this?
No, I don't actually. I think a lot of people just think what we have is how it works and how it should be. And there may be aspects who understand it, very limited aspects who understand it. But what is required to re-engineer it, it just seems too big a mountain to climb. And that's why they go with their economic advisors, their Keynesian economists, and continue this system that we have now and accept the catastrophic outcome that is inevitable from it. And it's sad. Like, in some ways, Jeff is the most important economist in the world, because he's the one who understands exactly what is happening, why it goes wrong, and what needs to be done. And he should be held in much higher regard than Keynes or any modern monetary economist, because they're all liars and they're all complicit in what is going wrong. Yeah, I'll probably give Jeff a call after this. It's been a while. I love that man.
What do you think should be the role of government?
So I'm not an anarchist in that it's not that I believe government is necessary. I just believe it's inevitable. Mm-hmm. I just think the way humans coordinate, we will always end up with government. And with good government comes freedom, because they defend and protect freedom. But the role of government for me is very limited, as tiny as possible. and it should defend life, liberty, and property. And that is it.
And get out of the way.
Get out of the way. Do nothing else. We will undoubtedly have a better, happier, more productive society than what we have right now, which is something which is collapsing in this age of confiscation.
Is the current political system sustainable?
I mean, it's sustainable until it isn't. It's sustainable until there is conflict that means it isn't, or there's revolution until it isn't. But it sustains itself, and it will continue to sustain itself as long as it can. But I think it's living on fumes.
How did the UK end up here?
The same way everyone else did, with a system that's engineered in the wrong way.
Regulation. Do you believe in democracy?
I want to believe in it. Mm-hmm. I think it's the fairest thing to say each person has a vote. But it doesn't work in the system that we have right now. And in some ways, I am sympathetic to the views of why a monarchy works better. Yes, you have the risk of a bad king, the evil prince. But I understand the incentives are different. I'm sympathetic to the idea that a country should be run like a company with a CEO, like Curtis Yarvin talks about. But these are heresy to most people because, like, how can you argue against democracy? We fought for democracy. Look at all the places that don't have democracy, and look at Iran, what's happening now.
Can you talk a little bit more about the concept of running a country as a company?
Well, you would treat the Prime Minister more like a CEO, have a board of directors, and they would have a mandate for what they need to do for the country, and they would be rewarded or punished based on that. And if there is corruption, they would go to jail, as they should.
Economically rewarded?
Yeah, I mean, what kind of people do you think you get for 90 grand a year?
Yeah, we are getting.
If I was an MP, I would do it now because I don't need the money. But if you need the money, who do you think you get for 90 grand a year? You're not getting our best people. Because your equivalents on 90 grand are going to take jobs at 90 grand, hoping they get a bonus, hoping they get to 250 and half a mil. You're getting people whose ceiling is basically 90 grand unless they become prime minister. These aren't 90 grand people. These are 30 grand people who are taking the 90 grand job because nobody else wants it. Okay. And I would pay so high. I would change the way we measure it and the goals. I'd be paying half a million, and I would provide full transparency into what they do, but I would give them the mandate to run the government departments, not that the departments run themselves. So they're fully accountable, because what we lack is accountability. There's always someone else to blame. We blame the OBR, we blame this, we blame that. No, we should have a fully accountable political office that is responsible for the decisions, responsible for the outcomes, and accountable.
It's okay to have a prime minister that gets rich out of running a successful country, a successful term.
Yes, I would far rather have a prime minister get rich from running the country successfully than gets rich from running the country in a safe way, knowing they get board seats and speaker fees afterwards, which gets them wealthy. Like, let them get rich in the job and make them retire, not rich after the job.
How do you sell that to the public?
Good arguments. You just need good arguments. You just have to, look, something isn't working. You look at Zach Polanski, head of the Greens. Bless him, but he's a moron. Like, he is a half-wit. And this is a guy some people think should run the country because he says about hope and change. He doesn't understand the basics of economics. Some of his inspiration is Marx's. Like, he is a thick idiot, objectively a thick idiot. And he is considered by some people as the guy they want to run the country. I mean, I wouldn't have him run a coffee shop. And people want him to run a country. And I know you laugh, but it's terrifying. And we have brilliant people in this country. And they don't go anywhere near politics. Why would they? They have their lives exposed, constant pressure, might get murdered, and there's no financial reward.
Yeah.
And so we are attracting idiots to run our country. Rachel Reeves is an idiot. Keir Starmer is an idiot. Ed Miliband is an embarrassment. Yvette Cooper, Bridget Phillipson, David Lammy, these people are rubbish, useless morons. And they are hollowing out our country through their stupidity, lack of integrity, lack of foresight. It's bad.
What's your personal red line? Something the government could do that would make you leave the country altogether?
Well, the last straw might be one that you can't avoid. I mean, an exit tax.
Uh-huh.
The problem with an exit tax, you have to announce it and implement it on the same day. And you can't do that. And the minute you announce it, everyone's like, cheerio. We may already be at that point. They might have already crossed that red line. And not for me. You know, I think about my children, right? Why? What reason should they stay here in the UK? Like, we have a state that is running on fumes, which is increasing taxes, increasing regulation, borrowing more. They are looting the public. It's the legalized plunder of Bastiat that we are living through. It's so obvious. I mean, I should get them the fuck out of this country in somewhere with opportunity. So I think the red line's already been crossed when I think of my children. I mean, I've had a good life. Like, whatever happens to me, I don't care. But I care about my children. But there would be certain authoritarian things that they might do. Like, they're delaying elections. Maybe if they stole an election, I might be like, this is it, I gotta go. But really, I probably should have left before.
What needs to happen for the UK to become healthy again?
Burn it all down and start again. I'm going to sound like a broken record. I think we need a codified constitution with a Bill of Rights that protects the freedoms of the people of this country, which allows the pursuit of happiness, which massively reduces the function of the state to give people opportunity. Large parts of what Milei has done in Argentina.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot can be done in 4 years. I think Milei has proved that. I think the minute you elect somebody on that mandate, you've started the process. I don't know if there's like an end point where it's done.
Yeah.
You've started that process. And once things start to improve, you have to be bold and continue. And you have to do whatever you can to prevent the statist, socialist, thieves getting back into a power and undoing that work.
How do you see Bitcoin fitting in?
It's a good question. I think it's central, but I don't talk about it because it scares people off. But I think Bitcoin is a forcing function.
Mm-hmm.
It takes the ability to create money away.
Hmm.
It changes all the incentives because you cannot create money. And so ideally, a country would be on a Bitcoin standard. So I think it's essential. I think it's essential for maintaining the reversal.
Why do you think it scares people away?
If you don't understand Bitcoin.
Lack of understanding.
Yeah, when you first hear about it, like, you've had all these other stories in your head that it's for criminals and terrorists and it's a Ponzi, and you see some idiot like me driving around in a nice car and you just think it's about that. Most people don't understand money truly. Think about money the way a Jeff Booth does and think about the economic system. They are the boiling frog. And so to think there's like a completely different financial system based on scarcity that can work is a huge leap for people.
How would you explain Bitcoin to King Charles in a nutshell?
All right, I'm going to meet King Charles, Buckingham Palace, go explain Bitcoin to him. I would say that to have a truly fair and democratic country, we have to have a fair democratic form of money. And the only form of fair and democratic money is one that's ruled by consensus and does not give the levers of money creation to the state. And the only form of money that can do that is Bitcoin. How's that? That work?
Perfect.
We'll take that.
Let's go through some of the prime ministers you've had, past and present. For each one, give me one good thing and one bad thing they did for Britain. Let's start with Margaret Thatcher. You already mentioned something good she did.
Yeah, look, this will be a challenge. But for me, Margaret Thatcher, I think the best thing, she took over a government that was going with its cap in hand to the IMF. We had the 70s, we averaged 13% inflation and we peaked at 25%. And she ended that period with policies to, and it was painful for the country to go through. Like people went through real pain, but she restored economic confidence in the country. And I think that's her most important legacy. Others will talk about the Falklands and respect on the world stage, but actually she took down the unions, but ultimately it was she restored economic confidence in the country. And her biggest failure would be the poll tax, which if you don't understand, it was a tax, a local tax. I can't remember the tax it was meant to replace, and it was meant to be something that every person paid equally. So if you were a billionaire or you were poor, you all paid it equally. It was like one vote, one payment. I think it was like £400, whatever. But it kind of went against the spirit of progressive taxation. That, if you're poor, you should pay less, and if you're rich, you should pay more. And it failed. There were protests on the street. They couldn't collect it. And that brought her down. And that means she ended her period on a negative when she'd done so much good for the country. But it was a failed tax idea.
John Major.
I don't know a lot about John Major because I only know about, I lived through Thatcher and Major, but I was so young. I think one of the most important things he did, I'm half Irish. He had an important role in what eventually became the end of the Troubles in Ireland. I think it was called the Downing Street Declaration or something. As I remember it, it was a policy based around allowing the Irish to vote British rule out of Ireland, I believe it. It was an attempt to end the cycle of violence between the Unionists and the Republicans. The Troubles in Ireland, if you've never watched them, there's a great series that BBC did. It was just a cycle of endless violence. It felt like there was no way out of it. Bombings in Ireland, Omar particularly, was a shocking bomb that they put in a car. There's a famous photo just before the bomb went off, because all the people who died in it. There was the bombing of the hotel with Thatcher, and they tried to kill her. But this cycle of violence just did not end. And I think John Major played a large role in ending that cycle of violence by giving the idea that the only way this would be solved was through peace. In terms of a negative, again, I don't know him that well. So because of that, I guess I don't know what his vision was. My main negative of him is not understanding what the country stood for under him. But he's a good guy. I've listened to good interviews with him.
Tony Blair?
Tony Blair, I've thought about this a lot. And I almost don't want to give him a good, because I despise the man more than anyone that's been in this country. But I have to hand it to him. The Good Friday Agreement, again with Ireland, was basically the actual end of violence in Ireland. And there has been obviously sporadic moments of violence, and there will be better people who can explain it to who I am. But they took risks, but the IRA disarmed after that, and they moved towards a democratic process in what is a very difficult political environment in Ireland, because it's sectarian. Clinton, along with Gerry Adams, who himself took huge risks to negotiate with the British state to end that cycle of violence. But I cannot not give him credit for that as somebody who's half Irish. In terms of the things he's done that are bad, they are countless. The Iraq War, I believe he should be tried in The Hague for that. But I think one of the most evil things he did was remove powers away from central government. He essentially created the deep state. by awarding powers to unelected bodies. And we faced so many consequences from that years down the line.
Gordon Brown.
Again, not somebody I know too much about. He served one term less than he should have become prime minister before he did. Tony Blair had promised him and then served one more term. And sadly for him, he was handed the tail end of that Labour administration. What I do know about him is his deep care for poverty and poverty in the country. There's not much I'm going to find good in a Labour politician because I ideologically disagree with the Labour Party. I just disagree with left-wing parties in this country. But he does deeply care about people in poverty and he wants to help. And that's a good part of his character. His negatives, I mean, again, I don't know too much. Did he sell the gold? I think he sold all our gold. Yeah.
David Cameron.
Well, some people would say the Brexit vote was a negative, but and he offered it up to the backbenchers in return for them supporting his run for prime minister. But I think the referendum on Brexit was a chance for the UK. We ballsed it up, but it was a chance for vote on our own sovereignty. And by honouring that, I think that's a good thing. But at the same time, I think it's also his biggest failure because he bailed on the negotiations and he should have carried that through. The problem with Cameron, there's very little difference between Cameron and Blair for me. You know, if you believed in politics, which I don't anymore, so it doesn't really matter, but if you believe in left and right wing, you want sharp differences between these people so you know what you're voting for. I don't think there are sharp differences between these characters.
Theresa May.
I don't know enough about Theresa May. I wasn't paying too much attention to politics at the time. She was handed the Brexit negotiations. I don't know what she did. I couldn't give you a good or a bad. I'm indifferent to her because I was not paying too much attention that time.
Boris Johnson.
A total failure. Mm-hmm. I think the only good thing he did is he kind of got the Brexit negotiations back on track, but an abject failure. A person of all character, no substance. Destroyed the trust in Parliament with Partygate, completely mishandled COVID. That's a shame because it was somebody people always liked, but just an abject failure.
Liz Truss?
Liz is an interesting one. I've got to know Liz. And the sad thing about Liz Truss is she fully understands all the problems in the country. She would echo a lot of what I've said, and I echo a lot of what she said, in that the deep state is a problem. She wanted to take on the Treasury, which is a good thing. She recognized the problem of growth and wanted to drive growth. She understands that. We needed to, you know, reduce taxes and she wanted to borrow. I think it was the failure of execution. Now, part of that isn't all down to her. The deep state and the Bank of England worked against her, but she rushed. And I wish she'd have stuck it out and not resigned and said, no, I'm sticking to my guns here. Fuck you, fuck the pressure. I wish she'd have stuck with it. But handed the reins differently. And she's had to take a lot of arrows since and still does. From people who just do not understand why they are wrong, but they are wrong. She's the best prime minister we basically didn't have over the last 2-3 decades, just because she understood the problems and she was willing to deal with them. But the mechanics of the state worked against her. I think she was too strong, and that's the problem.
Okay.
That machine will work against you. I've never asked her, but I should ask her why, if she could have stuck it out, why didn't she? That's what I'd like to ask her.
Yeah. Rishi Sunak?
Not a huge fan. I think he's very patronising, talks to the country like they're 5-year-olds. But I do think he did restore some economic confidence.
He was pro-CBDCs.
Probably, yeah. But they all are because they don't know what they're talking about. But he restored a lot of economic confidence when he handed the reins over to Keir Starmer. The country was certainly improving on many aspects. And I say that as somebody who's not a fan of his, but What I don't think he did is reform the Conservative Party in the way it needed reforming, which is to be a Conservative Party. There's too many wet liberals in there from the time of the coalition with the Liberal Democrats, which has really damaged the party. I don't think he was conservative enough, but I do think he restored some economic confidence.
And what about Keir Starmer?
I don't have anything good to say about Keir Starmer. I've tried to think about anything he's done, but I have an endless list of bad things. I feel sorry for the man. He's not up to the job. He's been given a job that is very difficult, very challenging. He's just not up to it. He doesn't have the ideas, the character, the leadership skills required for a prime minister at a time like now. He has a front bench of weak, incompetent people, and they've made terrible decision after terrible decision. They kowtow to their special interest groups. He isn't able to get decisions through. I think he's going to be known as the U-turn prime minister because the amount of U-turns the government has had to make, things they've tried to do, they can't get done. And the problem is we got a Labour Party at a time where it's the worst kind of party we can have. We needed a very conservative party. And because altruism is a function of a strong environment. Like if you have a strong economic environment, you can have an altruistic Labour Party, which gives shit away for free. I don't agree with it, but like that's the environment you want them to have it in. We have a poor economic environment and a government that wants to give stuff away for free and borrow more. And so he's been very weak. He's weak on the farmers. He's been weak on government debt. He's been weak on our civil liberties. He's been weak on regulation. I think he is very destructive. I think he will go down as one of the worst prime ministers in history or just forgotten about. But I think he needs to go. I think he needs to be honest with himself. I think the coolest thing he could do is resign and admit why he can't do the job. But he is a very weak man. And it's not a job for a weak man. This is a job for someone with a backbone and strength to accept the tough challenges of the country and implement the required changes. And he can't do it. I have nothing good to say about him.
Can you explain what inflation is and how to stop it, really simply?
Well, it's the biggest crime enacted on the public. It's the extraction of money from...
You lost me already.
Okay. Okay, how should I explain it? Inflation. So inflation is the general increase in prices, okay, which are not down to market forces. So if I buy a cup of coffee and the price has gone up because, I don't know, where we buy our coffee from, it's got more expensive because they've had a poor harvest. That's a temporary increase in prices to reflect the increase in the price of coffee. But the general increase in prices of everything is from inflation. So as things get more expensive everywhere, it is because of inflation. Okay, so why? What is it, the mechanics of that? It's because there's more money being created. So when there's more money in the system, it's chasing after the same goods and services. And so if it's general supply and demand economics, it means prices are going to go up. That's inflation. It's the general increase in prices.
But we need to create money because poor people need money.
That's bait. You're baiting me. No, we don't. No? You are baiting me.
Explain why not. This is the argument that I hear.
You're baiting me. And I know why, because you want the answer.
I want the answer, yeah.
That would assume that when money is created, that it's only created to create a fairer society to help poorer people. But that's not how money is created and distributed. When the government creates money, it's multiple ways, but it ends up on being created through the banks, and the banks end up distributing it. So those, we call them cantillionaires. The cantillion effect is that those closest to the money get access to it first. They get, therefore, access to the cheap credit to use it. They get to buy the assets, as well as other things. And when we get the general inflation the general rise in prices that comes off the back of that, it happens quicker than wage growth. And when that happens, people are just functionally made poorer because their purchasing power has been eroded. And so your argument is false because that's not how the money. And even if it was, what if you give that money to, you're not enabling them to create their own money. What you're doing is you're putting a sticking plaster over their financial position, but they're still creating more money in society, chasing after the goods and services that will see prices go up.
How do we stop it?
We have to stop money creation. And the only way we can do that is making Bitcoin the only money that people use.
You think people can go from not knowing Bitcoin to Bitcoin?
Well, I have.
Yes.
You have?
Yes.
So yes.
Without using labels, can you describe the kind of economic system you believe would work best in the UK and why?
Well, it's not just the UK, it's anywhere.
Yeah.
I think the best financial system is one where the base layer of money is decentralized and not controlled by any individual group of people, mm-hmm. where the money supply cannot be expanded because that changes the incentives and the mechanics of the system. That's the only way.
If someone gave you the UK tomorrow.
Yes.
What's the first law you would pass?
The first law I would pass would be universal free speech. I would give us what they have in the First Amendment in America. You know, that's the first thing I would do. Because I think I'd want to establish freedom and liberty within the country. So the first thing I would do is say, you are free to speak. So you can think and speak freely, and you are not going to face any legal consequences there. You might face social consequences, but that's fine.
Let's go through some of the main government departments. Just say what comes to mind, what's broken, and what needs fixing fast.
Okay.
Ministry of Defence.
Yeah, I mean, we've not invested in defence. I think our defence is... I think our Marines, our SAS and SBS are very good and highly respected. Okay. But I think we've not invested in our defense for a long time. And I think there's some like tank things we got recently that are just completely broken. We had a nuclear deterrent test that completely failed. But I think we have a weak defense that we've not invested particularly well in. I would want it as a deterrent that we're not a weak country you can just walk into and take. Mm-hmm. That's the main reason.
Yeah. The Treasury.
I think it's part of the mechanics of funding the government and funding irresponsible economic policy. This is one of the things Liz Truss has challenged, the orthodoxy of the Treasury. I think it needs to be run by a minister and not its own department. I just think it's a department of theft.
Department of Health and Social Care.
I think it's too kind and wants to fix everything. And that means it needs an infinite budget.
Department for Education?
It's just an embarrassment. We spend more on debt interest in our country than we do on education. And we're indoctrinating children to leftist bollocks. It's an embarrassment. We are not creating resilient, strong, intelligent kids who think critically. I mean, there was a thing that came out recently, something like 8 in 10 teachers would vote for Labour or Green. I mean, that's terrifying.
And you leave your kids with them for 6 hours.
Not mine.
Department of Business and Trade?
I would close it down because they get in the way of business and trade, and I would allow the free market to do its thing.
Department for Work and Pensions?
Same, but the thing is, I would close all of these departments.
Yeah.
I would, because they don't do the things I would do with government, which is defend life, liberty, and property. And so all these are departments that create extraction mechanisms from the productive parts of society.
And some people might think that you close them because you don't care about these things.
I can't close them because I care. Yeah, I close them because I care, because I don't know a single government department which net improves the things it wants to do.
Yeah.
I think it's all a drag on the freedoms of people to go out and create and be prosperous.
Ministry of Justice?
I mean, it's been captured and weaponized against the British public. And I don't know what I'd do with it, but we have lawfare that the government weaponizes against its own people.
Department of Environment?
Oh, do you know what? If I was going to leave one department, maybe those. This is one of my challenges on the libertarian end of things, in that you only have to look at a DuPont and what they did. You can watch the film Dark Waters and how they poisoned the land. Look, no restraints on business. I've never heard a very good libertarian answer for this, because it's a bit like what happened with the film Dopesick, mm-hmm. when Purdue created OxyContin and the calamity, the catastrophic impacts of the opioid crisis. Mm. And I don't know in a free market if there is any mechanisms to stop that. Sure, the mechanisms whereby people have free access to healthcare, but we saw that people committed crime to satisfy their addictions, and I just never heard a great libertarian answer for that. So I think I would perhaps be one of the last departments I would close. Maybe a healthy environment is part of the pursuit of happiness, something that a government should defend, that you get to live in a nice, healthy environment, and there are some limited restrictions they could put in place.
The energy department?
I think the energy should be free market. I think our Department for Energy has led to us having the most expensive energy in the world, which is a tax on businesses and cripples us. I mean, it's just catastrophic.
When you talk about free market, what do you mean?
Well, the free market is the ability for you and I to freely exchange with each other, for you to provide something, set a price, and me to agree contractually to exchange money for whatever it is you're providing. And the free market means there's no government regulations or barriers that get in the way of that exchange, that distorts that market, distorts the prices. And so that's what the free market is. Do I think we'll ever get a fully free market? Probably not. But I would like, give me 90% of regulations and interference, and we will have a much more prosperous function in society, which will create more jobs and opportunity for people. I would remove government from interfering with where energy comes from and the prices that are being charged. There are some challenges with that, in that obviously you don't want to have, if you had competition in electricity, you don't want to have two sets of electric lines side by side and choose which one you want to be. And so the competition has to act within a single infrastructure. And perhaps there is a role in government for the infrastructure, the providing the infrastructure, not providing, but allowing the competition to exist within that infrastructure. But it's the regulation and the taxes and the burden and the focus on this kind of net zero stupidity, which I believe has led to us having the most expensive prices in the world. Because in a free market for energy, we wouldn't have the large solar and wind farms. We'd probably still be burning coal. We may have more nuclear. And so I think in a freer market for energy in this country, we would have demonstrably lower energy prices.
What kind of leadership style do you think is necessary to fix those issues?
Probably a number of skills I don't have. I
bet you do.
I think you have to be honest, stoic, factual, non-confrontational, unless it's required. I think you have to leave your ego at the door. I don't know if that person exists within this country right now, and if they did, whether people would want them. I think we're so gone and so broken.
Let's play 2029. Prime Minister McCormack walks into his first cabinet meeting. Who do you surround yourself with? What kind of people are sitting at the table? And what qualities do you value most in them?
I would surround myself with experts in their field. Hopefully my energy secretary would be Catherine Porter. Mm-hmm. I believe she is an expert in understanding energy. On the economic side, I'd hope to have Jeff Booth with me, but mm-hmm. I might not be able to get him. So I don't be someone like, I don't know, Shankar Singham. It'd probably be a bunch of people I've interviewed who I respect. It would be as small as possible, focused entirely on delivering exactly what I would want my mandate to be, which is drastically reduce the size of government, focused on life, liberty, and defense of property, property rights. The quality I would want from them all is loyalty to the mission, because I would set it as a specific plan and a time scale. And once we've delivered, I would want to be able to step down and return to normal life. I have no desire for power. I have desire for results. And so I would say, be loyal to the plan. Put all your personal ambition to one side. Take one for the team in this. And if we agree to this plan, let's go and execute it. Don't work against this department. Don't work against me. And hopefully they would be loyal to the mandate.
I think you will get Jeff Booth.
Maybe. I'm not sure if he's allowed to be.
I don't know. An advisor?
Yeah, maybe as an advisor.
What was your campaign slogan during the elections?
PM for PM. The Great Restoration.
Do you think the people that know you well, your staff, your players, your audience, will have voted for you?
I think so.
Why?
I think I've built trust. I think I've executed on the promises I've made. I've set a vision and stuck to it. So I think people will trust me. I think the people close to me, there's a gap between people who don't know me who and they form their opinions of who I am and who I actually am. And the people around me know me. So I think they trust me.
Pete, I see your tweets. Mm-hmm. I listen to your pod. You are utterly frustrated. You are an honest, hardworking builder, 1,000% British, and absolutely disgusted with your government. You turn a park team into a global Bitcoin billboard. You are doing what Bitcoin has always said we were supposed to do, not just the stack sats, but get out there and help fix the world. You've got the heart, the empathy, and the courage to do it. You've got the skills to surround yourself with the best and brightest. And you could get the support of the Bitcoiners that helped put Trump in the White House. You didn't vote in the last three elections because you didn't feel represented, but could you be the representation millions of British people are longing for?
I mean, I could be. It's whether they want what I'm selling, the mandate I would want to deliver, and they would believe in it. And that's a very tough thing.
So Pete McCormack, 4 years from now, Prime Minister, why not? Could you be the leader Britain needs?
Not in 4 years, maybe in 8 years when reform come in and unable to deliver, perhaps then. I don't think I'm on that path to do that. That's the problem, because that path needs direction. It needs commitment. It needs intentionality. And I don't have the intention of doing that. So I'm just a guy who writes some blogs and makes some podcasts at the moment. Should somehow my content create a movement where people want it and my family wanted me to do it and I believed I could do it, why not? I'd have to surround myself with some far more intelligent people than I am, but I think the skill I would have would be able to bring people along. The smart people have to execute it.
We need to call the early Bitcoiners to the table to help finance the presidential campaign to change Britain and the world. So to wrap up, if the Bitcoiners showed up, if the money was there, would you say yes?
If I believed that what is required could be achieved, of course. It'd be no greater privilege to serve your country and restore it to what it needs to be. I think you've put the cart before the horse. I think if I wanted to and chose to do it, I think the Bitcoiners would support me. and say, go for it, Pete. I just need to believe I can and have the intentionality to do it. And it is something I wrestle with regularly.
If you would say yes, what would you call first?
My first phone call, I wouldn't answer here. There is somebody who's already told me to do it. And I just would throw them under the bus. There's a few people I would call. I'd call Danny, just to laugh about it. I'd call Jeff Booth. Mm-hmm. Say, Jeff, this is what I'm thinking. I think it's possible. Can you help me? I would call Lynn Alden and say, Lynn, I need some guidance on the economic side of things. I'd give my friend American Hoddle a call. Mm-hmm. And say, am I being a moron? And he'll say, yeah, but you can do this. There's no one first call. Well, probably Danny. I'll probably phone Danny and say, am I actually doing this? Yeah.
Does Britain need you, or do you need Britain?
Oh, Britain doesn't need me. But Britain, the UK needs a good, strong leader who can restore it to greatness. And there are many better people than me who are far more skilled or able to do this that perhaps don't understand the problem. And ideally, a few of them start to connect the dots and realize, actually, this is what's required. I mean, ideally, Nigel Farage is going to probably become our next prime minister. Reform will most likely win the next election. The ideal world, he fully understands this and he executes it because he has that path to power. And so, yeah, I don't need the UK, I want it.
When I interviewed Jeff Booth, he told me that he didn't want to write The Price of Tomorrow. Mm. And I asked him why not, and he said, because I wanted someone else to do it. But I kept talking about these concepts, no one was receptive, so I had to go and write the book.
He's a very special man, our Jeff Booth.
It's a little bit of what you're saying. No?
Yeah. I'll ponder this.
Last one.
Okay.
Are you proud of yourself?
I'm just not sure I think about it. I want to be proud of myself as a father. Mm-hmm. That's really important to me. Pride comes before the fall. I don't need to be proud of myself. I just need good intentions and to ensure I follow through on them.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Your candor and everything you've built, Pete. Where can people follow you, argue with you, or buy you a pint?
I mean, I'm usually in my coffee shop or at the football. That's easy to find. Otherwise, I have a podcast. It's called The Peter McCormack Show. You can find it on YouTube, Spotify, anywhere. And I have a Twitter, at Peter McCormack. I can be a little bit noisy and loud. And
are you a noster?
Blunt. I try to remember what my noster is. I think it's McCormack.
We'll find it.
But yeah, I've just started posting on there a little bit more recently, rather than just like posting here on my shows, like a couple of comments recently. Bitcoin Twitter's dead.
Can't wait to have you back. Until then, stay sovereign.
Thank you. I understand everything that Michael said now. Yeah, there's a lot to think about here. And I appreciate the hard work that you've put into those questions, because no interview has ever made me think this deeply and forced me to be so honest. So I appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter.